Hello and welcome back to another episode here at The Damage Report. I am John Iadarola. Today is an exciting day, as 1/5 of all days on the show are, because it's a Friday, which means we have Brett Ehrlich. Brett, how's it going?
Oh, I'm so happy to be here in the neighborhood, just hanging out. Gonna close all these other windows so I can focus on my dear friend John Iadarola.
Probably good. You know what? You are reliable. I can rely on you to focus on our show several seconds into the show, not in anticipation of it or anything like that, but that's something we have.
At the very least, it was related to what we were talking about beforehand. So it's not like I was on the Rust server we just set up for TYT, which everyone can experience this evening on Game Busters.
Oh, so you're going to be launching back into Rust now. How exactly would a Rust game be busted?
I don't know, but essentially we are trying to embark on a new journey where we are setting up our own society according to rules we lay out for ourselves to see what happens. The TYT
Will it be a
utopia.
Dystopia? A utopia? Tune in and find out.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely random military installations we can't take out of the game. So if you go to those, you get shot. But
okay.
Everything else, you can run around naked. It's up to you.
Nice. Anyway, so you can tune in to Rust Busters later on tonight. That's going to be a lot of fun. Here on the show, we've got a lot to look forward to, including when we close out, we have an errand to do. One of our chores, I guess. Hold on one sec.
Oh, no. John.
The garbage has to be thrown away. And I'm excited because I have a very simple garbage person. Some might say a very petty garbage person, but it's something I've been holding in my back pocket for a few days, and I need to talk for a minute about it. So stay tuned to the end of the show to get to that. Along the way, we got a lot that we're gonna be talking about. Not only Kevin McCarthy and all these videos that are popping up and making him look ridiculous, devastating injustice in the so-called justice system. What did Greg Abbott actually accomplish at the border, and some, I'm gonna say for legal reasons, very suspicious coincidences going on around Russia and their invasion of Ukraine. So a lot to look forward to. Also, a little update on that Bernie Sanders bombshell that dropped earlier this week. So everyone, I'm gonna need you to hold on to your butts as we launch into that. Also, hit the like button. So release one hand from the butt to click the like button so that people know we're live. And if you wanna send us super chats, comments, tweets, all that, we'll respond as we go. But with that said, Brett, are you ready to talk about the news?
Yeah, let's do it, John.
Okay, let's definitely do it. Actually, right before we launch that, I will say a lot of people are already messaging me. Sophie, it's gonna be okay. Messaging me like, Marjorie's in court. No, she is, but it's like we're live. We can't track it live. So we'll be taking a look at what happens, I'm sure, on other shows, on the main show. Trust me, I know that she's in court.
And for raw footage, as soon as we have it, go to youtube.com/TYT Investigates Reports. Don't look at me like that. TYT Investigates Reports, because Josh DePiel, former intern for The Damage Report, is cutting little clippies up to put on throughout the day. He's already on it. So that's a great place to go for that and other supplements to things we'll have later in the show. So there you go.
Well, that is awesome. I see actually, they've got some stuff that's been uploaded just recently. So everybody look into that. Okay, now with that said, now, so that Sophie doesn't kill me, let's jump into this.
Liz, you on the phone?
Yeah, I'm here. Thanks, Kevin. I guess there's a question. When we were talking about the 25th Amendment resolution, and you asked if you know what happens if it gets there after he's gone. Is there any chance, are you hearing, that he might resign? Is there any reason to think that might happen?
I've had some few discussions. My gut tells me no. I'm seriously thinking of having that conversation with him tonight. I haven't talked to him in a couple of days.
So that is Kevin McCarthy. Way back in January of last year, in audio that was released just in the last day, and the video that you just saw right there came from Rachel Maddow's show. Now, this video is important not only for the content, in that Liz Cheney and Kevin McCarthy are talking about the possibility of invoking or encouraging the invocation of the 25th Amendment, which would have removed Donald Trump from power. But the mere presence of the video is significant, because it comes about after a fun little back and forth that we're gonna dive into it. Now, it started with reporting from the New York Times. In stuff that's going to be in a new book called This Will Not Pass, because we're in a time in American politics where everything important is sat on for a year and a half to eventually come out in a book. Anyway, they revealed that in the days after the January 6th attack on the Capitol building, the two top Republicans in Congress, that is Senator Mitch McConnell as well as Kevin McCarthy, told associates that they thought Trump was responsible for inciting the riot and vowed to drive him out of politics. Specifically, Mr. McCarthy was reported to have said that he was going to push Mr. Trump to resign immediately. Quote, "I've had it with this guy," he told a group of Republican leaders. Now, that was bombshell reporting. But at that point, all we had was the word of these journalists. And so Kevin McCarthy came out strong against it, putting out a statement calling the reporting totally false and wrong. His spokesman, Mark Bednar, denied that the Republican colleague told colleagues he would urge Mr. Trump to leave office. Quote, "Mr. McCarthy never said he'd call Trump to say he should resign." And it was like just a few hours that after that, that the video came out. So here's a little bit of what was being referred to in the New York Times.
"From what I know of him, I mean, you guys all know him too. Do you think he'd ever back away? But what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to call him. This is what I think. No, it'll pass the House. I think there's a chance it'll pass the Senate even when he's gone. And I think there's a lot of different ramifications for that. Now, I haven't had a discussion with the Dems that if he did resign, would it not happen? Now, this is one personal fear I have. I do not want to get into any conversation about Pence pardoning again. I mean, the only discussion I would have with him is that I think this will pass, and it would be my recommendation we should resign. I mean, that would be my take, but I don't think he would take it, but I don't know."
Okay, now just to be very clear, I see people in the chat saying, well, look, that doesn't mean that he actually had the conversation with Trump, which is true. But I want to go back to that last graphic. The spokesman didn't say, no, that's not true. He didn't talk to Trump about it. He said McCarthy never said he'd call Trump to say he should resign. And that is very, very highly specifically what is in that call. And McCarthy tried to deny that it happened. I guess he didn't know at that point that it had been recorded. So, oops, they've got the receipts. And that is exactly what you said you were going to do. I have a lot more thoughts about this, but Brett, what do you make of it?
Specifically, so this exposes what the difference is between Republican go-alongs in front of the cameras versus behind the scenes. Behind the scenes, in front of the cameras, they're gonna go out and say, like, listen, it isn't a big deal. Everybody is overreacting. The lamestream media is having a field day, and they have no right to because they're all owned, bought, and sold by liberals. But behind the scenes, even Kevin McCarthy understands the gravity of this situation and the unprecedented nature of the insurrection that took place on January 6th. And when he's talking candidly with people behind the scenes, he understands, and his instinct is, this is so bad that even in the environment we're in the toxic environment we're in, where Trump is completely lambasting and trying to eliminate the credibility of the media, even Kevin McCarthy thinks that it's a bridge too far and that Trump himself should resign in this situation.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And look, I know many people are gonna be covering this because like people who might agree with us or be kind of on the spectrum are gonna be like, yeah, look at, they got him. But like, I guess I'm kind of doing that, but it's also partially like, no, he was kind of in private doing the right thing. Now, he didn't end up doing it. He only had the, I guess, the intestinal fortitude to imply that he would go against Trump for a couple of days. And then I guess they looked around, they thought, oh, our base is totally fine with this. There's enough conspiracy theories that are kicking up mud that Republicans don't know exactly what to think. So this is acceptable. Oh, okay. Well, then I guess I'm not going to push for it. But in the moment, he actually had the right impulse that this is unacceptable. This is a bridge too far. And unfortunately, and he turned around on it.
And that the Senate will vote to pass the impeachment resolution. So that is a beyond, yep, that is a super majority for the most part of the Senate.
And it wouldn't happen, of course. That didn't actually happen. And in fact, but, in the 25th Amendment thing, even the House, only Kinzinger even ended up voting for it. But anyway, now really fast, you had seen when the reporting came out, Kevin McCarthy and his spokesperson were like, "That's a lie, a dirty lie, fake news. How could you do it?" Well, in response to the direct audio of him coming out, he did not immediately respond to a request for comment. So he didn't know exactly what to say. Now, a lot of people are wondering coming out of this. And by the way, we're going to get to more of what was said by these different politicians in just one moment. But a lot of people are wondering, well, how are the Republicans going to respond to this? Are they going to try to take out Kevin McCarthy? It's interesting. They're starting to attack him a little bit. We'll get to something that Matt Gaetz said in a bit. But one thing I noticed was an article that was up on Fox News discussing this. And the article was, Kevin McCarthy rebuts New York Times reporting. Now, to be very clear, the article was published at like 8:30 Pacific time this morning, which is like close to noon Eastern time. Their reporting was entirely focused on the New York Times says he said this, but he rebuts it. This is hours and hours and hours and hours after the audio came out. That's not what the story is about anymore. It's no longer rebuttable. We can hear him say it, but the Fox News coverage sent the message to its fans that we don't know exactly. He's still saying he didn't say it. It felt like an oddly like a defensive move by Fox News to pretend that time had stood still before Rachel Maddow's show and there'd been no developments. Why else would you publish that article this morning? Like a full, like 12 hours after the audio came out, Brett.
I mean, I think we all know the
answer.
It's
weird.
It's just there's so much faith on the right that they can insulate all their people from any fallout. Mm-hmm. And there's a difference between that and the left. Like the left is so disparate and at its own throats.
Yeah.
And the incentives are different, right? Like the right has always been content to throw inedible benefits to their base. The red meat on the right does not result in full bellies, because the red meat, the things you throw at your base on the left results in food on the table, better jobs, a safer environment, things that you can actually enjoy in the physical realm. Mm-hmm. On the right, the red meat, it's free for them. They're like, no, it's not a big deal. People are trying to make your kids transgender and all this ridiculousness. And then they pass bills that don't result in any of that. On the left, we're all over the place, but at the very least, it's not that same dynamic.
100%. Yeah, 100%. Okay, I'm looking at the clock and I'm thinking, okay, forget the third video. Well, let's queue up for the fourth video and then we'll get to some of these other comments. So whenever you're ready on the direction side, you can jump to that last video.
If we lose the House, this is no joke. January 6th was a trial run. And a lot of people don't seem to understand that. It was a trial run. And they're going to come back and they win the House. Here's the thing, the technicality of what happened on January 6th. The only reason it wasn't worse was because Democrats had the House and they didn't have the votes in the House. If they take the House, then they have the votes to not authorize and legitimize the presidential election, whatever the results are. And so this is very serious.
I agree. It is very serious, and I'm glad that AOC is focusing on it because the Democratic leadership doesn't really seem to get the severity of this. Now, you might think, well, that's not fair. I mean, after all, they're doing the January 6th commission, right? They're taking it seriously. Yes, they're sort of investigating and they're sitting on their hands, and maybe sometime before the election, something will come out right before the Republicans sweep back into power and get rid of the January 6th commission. That's good. Jamie Raskin's doing some work and stuff like that. But in terms of fighting back against the anti-democratic movement that we're seeing, there's very little actually coming out from the Democrats on that. And what's interesting is with all this news that's come out about Kevin McCarthy, like when you contrast the things that he was saying back in the day, I would like to hear some of that coming from the Democrats. Let's jump into some more of what we found out about Kevin McCarthy after the 6th. He said at that point that Trump's conduct had been atrocious and totally wrong. He said that the president had incited people to attack the Capitol, saying that Mr. Trump's remarks at a rally in the National Mall that day were not right by any shape or any form. Now, of course, I guess the joke is on democracy, because in the end, Kevin McCarthy ends up totally going along with it and all that. But look, on the 10th, he was having a January 10th of last year, he's having a conversation saying that not only would he call on Mr. Trump to resign, he said that he wished big tech companies would strip Republican lawmakers of their social media accounts, as Twitter and Facebook had already done at that point with Donald Trump. He said, we can't put up with that, this irresponsible behavior in social media. Can't they take their Twitter accounts away too? And now he's saying, Mr. McCarthy, his spokesman says, never said that particular members should be removed from Twitter. Well, I'm sure like the New York Times reporters say that they have more on tape. I'm assuming if they're making that claim, they had that on tape too. So get ready for the backtrack on that, Brett. But that is so directly against everything the Republicans now publicly stand for, encouraging big tech censorship of their elected representatives because of irresponsible behavior.
Well, that's because they have no actual, to put it in John terms, any actual values other than they value power. And they will do anything to retain it. So that is politics winning out over the ideals that this country was founded on. That is power's power over doing what's right, which is they should not be called the right wing, because nothing they do is ever right. It is utterly morally wrong and reprehensible. And that's the thing. The reason that Kevin McCarthy was freaking out when this happened and said, I will probably, I think the president's not going to want to back down, but I think the people in the Senate are going to push him to resign through a vote to pass an impeachment, even the Republicans. He realizes though, there used to be this thing where when Nixon resigned, it looked like there was enough honor among the people in his own party that against a mountain of not only evidence, but just this instinct that they were being horrible. And this is not the direction America could be perceived to be going in. The people would step up and vote against this. There was honor. There used to be honor, even in a Nixon era. But now there is none. Now there is only, and the other thing is that feeds into things like why there's a Fox Nation and not a CNN Plus anymore. It's because there is no enthusiastic person out there who's like, I need to get rid of Trump because he's just too much. That's the instinct. But there's people that say, I need to get Trump back because this is not enough. Yeah. And I think that I also do look forward to the New York Times coming out and saying, yeah, here's more proof. And we're going to keep releasing the audio of it until you stop denying it.
Yeah. And whether that has any consequences for Kevin McCarthy, we're going to have to see. I don't know. I mean, like, it seems equally likely that in 2 days, we won't even remember the story exists, or in 2 days, Donald Trump will literally be doing rallies where the only thing he does is like set fire to an effigy of Kevin McCarthy. I don't know at this point. No consequences is like sort of the median position on everything that happens, but we'll have to see. Now, the issue is that while he was saying things like this, and we're gonna get to Mitch McConnell, flash forward just a few days to the actual vote. Only 10 House Republicans joined with Democrats to support impeaching Donald Trump. So like at that point, I guess the tide had turned. It was clear that the tide wasn't going to turn. So those who had been looking at the ocean decided, well, I guess I'm still with Trump. Because just by the end of that month, Kevin McCarthy, who was saying he was going to encourage him to resign and that it was atrocious behavior, unacceptable, no shape and form was it right, was going to Mar-a-Lago and just hanging out with him. And since then, all those comments are done. There are some Republicans who still criticize Trump for what happened on the 6th, but not Kevin McCarthy. He's moved on from that. Mitch McConnell, who will occasionally criticize him, even though, remember, Mitch McConnell turned on impeachment too. He previously said that he thought the Democrats would, quote, take care of the son of a bitch for us. Remember, publicly, he was saying, well, I think he's going to be out of office in a few weeks. So this is just an attempt to distract the nation. Like, he turned against it just as fast as Kevin McCarthy. But in private, he was taking it seriously. So I don't know. Do you give him credit off of that? And to bring this back to AOC in terms of the trial run, when they go for the next attempt, there are going to be a lot of Republicans that are perfectly fine with it. New poll in Salon, a majority of Republicans believe now they've landed on, no, it was an act of patriotism. 57% say that. 88% of Democrats say it was an insurrection. So remember, the vast majority of those Republicans that now say it's an act of patriotism were denouncing Antifa on the day of. But now you give it a year, a couple extra months, and it's an act of patriotism that we should all be able to get behind, Brett.
And they can't. That's what's so infuriating about it. And that's the thing I honestly don't have a solution for. Because they're so tribal that they just want to be right. Mm-hmm. And they don't need to be consistent in their justification for it. So that's another theme of this, is the right wing doesn't start with a response and build on that response to something horrible that they've done that's obviously wrong. They know it's wrong. They know, like, think of everyone like Kevin McCarthy, who would much rather Mitch McConnell be in power, would much rather have a Mike Pence, someone boring and religious and totally, you know, abortion plus tax cuts equals Republican Party.
Yep.
It's very frustrating. I don't have a solution for it. That's the problem.
I don't. And look, that can be personally disappointing for us. Maybe our audience wishes that we could solve it. It's not all on us.
Just to finish the thought, it's that they try something and they know that it's bad, and then they see it fail. They throw the spaghetti off the wall, it falls down. They don't justify why they threw that wad of spaghetti against the wall. They just abandon it and come up with a completely contradictory defense to their actions and throw that against the wall. And if that sticks a little, they build on that. But they're never held accountable for the fact that if they try three different responses to the same event, and two of them are wildly contradictory to the third, they're never held accountable that they exposed already that their justifications 100%. Are BS and not founded in any reality, but rather founded in whether they test well with their own audience.
Exactly. Well, look, to bring it to terms that John would use, it's because a desire for consistency, internal logic, those sorts of things, that is not a value on the right. It isn't. We might falsely believe that that's not a political thing. That's just everybody wants to be consistent, right? No, values get ranked. And a desire, as you said earlier, a desire for power, a desire for a feeling of superiority, of ideological purity over intellectual consistency, those so far outrank any desire for logic or attachment to reality on the right that you can't even see those values anymore. They're so deep descended into the muck. Anyway, like really fast, Mark Levin was doing a whole show on Disney talking about how it's a network of perverts. They shouldn't be able to exist. Does anyone on the right think it's weird that no one on the right was saying that like 4 months ago? They were all totally fine with it. That DeSantis took $100,000 from a group of commie perverts and they don't have any problem with it. There is just no desire for any of this. And that said, we're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about just one of the worst situations right now in the criminal justice system, as well as we're going to laugh at Greg Abbott a little bit. So don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. Okay, that was a weird break that we just had there. But we are going to have to get it together because this is one of the roughest stories we're going to be talking about, not just on today's rundown, but on the entire week. That said, it's important, so let's jump into it. At this point, when you're watching this, or at least when we're filming it, Texas is less than 1 week away from executing a woman named Melissa Lucio, a mother who was convicted of murder in the death of her 2-year-old daughter more than a decade ago. There's a chance that you're familiar with some of the details of this story. What you will find if you're not is that the more you hear about this, the more unacceptable them going forward with this is. Every detail just shows how little concern there was for getting to anything even approaching the truth of what happened in that tragic death. We're going to give you some of the basic facts so you understand this, but you saw there the Innocence Project, which is obviously working on this, putting out a photo of Melissa Lucio. Now, back in 2008, Melissa was sentenced to death in Texas for the murder of her 2-year-old daughter, Mariah, who died 2 days after a tragic fall. Now, what happened is the child fell down a flight of stairs while the family was moving homes in 2007. The toddler had a mild physical disability that made her unstable while walking and prone to tripping. 2 days later, she took a nap and didn't wake up, which is, no matter any other detail of the story, an absolute tragedy, clearly. But that does not mean that it's murder. And there's a massive difference between one of the worst tragedies that can regrettably happen to a family and then implying that it was purposeful, the result of abuse. Now, that is the direction that the Justice Department went in, or those investigating this. So authorities jumped in. They did not seem particularly interested in the disability that we mentioned earlier that might lead the child to be more prone to these sorts of falls. What they did was an incredibly coercive interrogation of Melissa Lucio. So it was over 6 hours long, late into the night. Already terrible conditions, especially for a mother who just lost her child. They used what's called the Reed technique, which since has been identified as leading to a number of different false confessions. I would find that to be unacceptable. My producer is pointing out that at that point she was also pregnant, so even more context to how devastating this interrogation was. They got in her face, they screamed at her, implying that she had to know what was going on, saying they had evidence that she was to blame for the death, which very, like, you cannot miss the fact that they did not. They are lying to her to get her to confess. Then they reassured her that all of this could be done. If she only admits that she was responsible, then she has nothing else to worry about. She said over 100 times during it that she was innocent, over and over and over again. But eventually, after hours of pressure, they broke her and they got her to say what they wanted, to repeat these phrases that they'd been coaching her on throughout that. That coerced confession was the core evidence presented at her trial, apparently critical to the jury's guilty verdict and the death sentence that followed. They did not need to demonstrate some sort of pattern of abuse of the children, anything else that would lead one to believe that aside from the death itself, that she might be responsible. They had the confession, which they forced out of her, and that's the evidence that was used. Now, there's a lot of other details, which we will get to, but Brett, what are your thoughts based on what you've seen so far?
Something specific, the Reed technique, when the more you find out about it, the more ridiculous it is. So the Reed technique is essentially a way to get people to admit to something, not the truth, not necessarily the truth. It is just a way of wearing someone down so that they'll say whatever you need them to say so that this can stop. There's no timer on it. Now, sometimes I'm sure the Reed technique results in a confession to what's true. But other times it has been proven that it just leads to people saying whatever the police want so that they'll essentially no longer have to endure the interrogation.
Yeah, 100%. And again, it's like, I wish we had a time to jump into that because that is worthy of its own whole thing. But right now, let's focus on Melissa Lucio, especially because time is short. We are mere days away from the execution. Now, on top of everything else that we've already said, evidence that had been presented at the trial has been debunked. The fact that timeline, as my producer points out, that the death was ruled a murder before an autopsy was conducted, which that's unacceptable, obviously. The jury didn't hear about Melissa's own history of trauma and abuse. The DA who prosecuted Lucio was running for re-election, has since been convicted of bribery and extortion. And there has been some, like, that's the context that's baked into the decision that they got. There's been some very interesting developments since then, including that 5 of the jurors in her case have come out in favor of clemency or a reprieve, citing in part the new evidence. One in particular said, I voted to sentence Melissa Lucio to death. I was wrong. There's a group of 103 bipartisan members of the Texas legislature, including 32 Republican members of the House and 8 Republican state senators. That is 32 Republican members of the House, 8 Republican state senators coming out against an execution, which is, that by itself should be the biggest news of the week potentially. But despite that, it is still moving forward. They are still proceeding and there's every reason to believe that unless there is a national uproar that they are going to go through with this, possibly one of the most unjust executions that we've seen in some time, Brett.
It is. I mean, this is one of those heartbreaking situations. That's why a lot of it, as you go through it, you're like, so we're going to execute this woman for it, for that. This, for stuff like this, is the reason I don't think we should have a death penalty. You just might be wrong.
Yeah.
Declaring it a murder before you have evidence of it, taking a confession and not really being able to bring actual evidence, and then the process that forbids any additional evidence from coming into the courtroom. But the thing for me is this happened 14 years ago. And she's gonna be killed by the state that says that, listen, we shouldn't have government overreach, but we should also just be able to kill you. And I understand there should be, and when this kind of information comes out, the amount of cost and time that it would take to get this through the justice system in a way that yields justice, which is what the justice system is named after, is prohibitive. Not only in terms of overall resources, but the amount of time she's allowed to be on death row before they kill her.
Yeah. Just think, like you pointed out, the time since it's been there. Like imagine, let's say that everything goes the way it should, that they do cancel this thing, which there's at this point not a great reason to believe that's going to happen. We have in the lower third, you can see the phone number there if you want to call Governor Abbott to try to put pressure on him. Of course, it's Governor Abbott, so that's going to be difficult. If you're on the podcast, by the way, the phone number is 956-446-2866. She lost her child. She has spent years and years in which she has been, you know, incarcerated. Many people might have up until recently thought that she actually did it. So that's its own terror, facing death. Even if nothing else happened, this has been an unacceptable, unimaginable situation to put this mother through. And she might die as a result of it. Like this should by itself, as you pointed out, this should be enough to get us to end the death penalty, that this sort of injustice can happen. But the thing is, we know that there's hundreds and hundreds of cases exactly like this, where the evidence was just as shoddy, the forced confessions were just as clear, and you know, the techniques that were used were just as objectionable. But we just keep letting it happening, and this is Texas, and some Republicans, to their credit, are coming out against it, but for the most part, like, perfectly fine with this. This is hardly new, specifically in Texas.
Yeah, and there's other facts, like if you read the objection, the strongly worded but still respectful letter from all the legislators. I think in there they point out that that her husband, who has a history of violence, has gone to jail and gotten out since then. Mm-hmm. And she's still there.
Insane.
And they just decide, you know, and that's it. That's what's so frustrating. And then what is Governor Abbott going to do? Is he going to extend this? No, he's like, there's a brown person, we're going to put him in jail. Like, I don't lose any points for keeping that there. Plus, we get to kill someone, which they in Texas, his base loves.
Yeah. Well, we're going to transition now to another story about Greg Abbott, just to give you an idea of his priorities, basically. Like, this is going on, he could have an effect, he could end this injustice, not cure it. It's all baked in at this point. He could do that. What has he actually been up to? Well, we're going to let you know as we transition into this. Governor Greg Abbott had a stunt over the past few weeks that we've talked about multiple times. It was, he's going to shut down the border to put pressure on the Biden administration, make it seem as if Biden isn't doing much. And in the meantime, potentially cause some increased inflation, because since the trucks can't come in, products won't be available, prices will go up. Well, he ended up looking like the bad guy, not Joe Biden. And after just 9 days, he canceled it. But in that time, he was able to do some damage, not perhaps to Joe Biden's approval rating, but to his state and to the country. And we've got the facts for you. One economist has estimated that those needless inspections that Abbott started cost Texas alone $4.2 billion and the equivalent of 36,000 jobs. All told, for the country, the damage was estimated at $9 billion, which you gotta give him credit. That is an amazing impact in just 9 days, costing $1 billion a day for your stupid, pointless, totally partisan stunt that he decided to pull there. That's not it, by the way, Brett. There's other bad details, but like there's not a lot of opportunities to do that sort of damage in that short a period of time.
Yeah, you gotta hand it to the guy.
He must wake up very early in the morning.
Must get up very early in the morning. $1 billion a day. And this is hilarious because this is the side of the aisle that says that they hate government waste. And this is the most interesting part of this is what is the left doing to point this out? Mm-hmm. I hope this story goes everywhere because this story gets to the heart of how ridiculous and stupid and contradictory people on the right who want to be president someday will go. You've got Abbott here who has already said this is the government overreaches and it gets too crazy and then says that he wants people to go break down doors to investigate parents who are like okay with their kid potentially, rumored has it, being transgender. And then he also wants to, he is so against inflation and all the supply chain issues that he is going to shut down in a way that the Border Patrol and Customs has said is you cannot recover from slowing down the import of things into the country, things that are coming to become the economy. Yeah. He's stopping it because I can't believe he's ridiculous. He doesn't understand that what he could do is just say mean things about immigrants and what's happening at the border, never do it and not cost people the money and still come out on top. But in this situation, he has really rolled in it because this guy has shut down the border and cost a very huge amount of money to the American people, specifically exactly. Those in his state.
Exactly. Yeah. Ton of money. Anyway, so okay, that's the cost, but you might say, well, okay, that was the cost, but they did it for a reason after all. It's to find contraband, to find human trafficking and drug smugglers and all that. So let's balance the cost against the gain. Well, state troopers did the inspections and found, oh no, zero drugs, weapons, or any other type of contraband. That almost, like just by chance, couldn't you have found some guns or something? No. They did 4,100 inspections. They didn't find any contraband, but they did cite some truck drivers for underinflated tires, broken turn signals, and oil leaks. And so at the end of the day, oil leaks and, you know, $4.2 billion kind of seems worth it now though, doesn't it, Brett?
It's just like it's like having a kid, I assume, where you're just like, listen, don't touch the fire. Like we have all these protocols in place for a reason. There's a cover in front of it. It protects us as it is. And they're like, no, I have to find out for myself. I know better than you. And so I need to go put my hands on the fire and mess with it. And you're like, you're gonna burn yourself. All the protocols and safety was in place at the border and it did fine.
Apparently.
But he went,
by the way, let's be very clear. They already do those inspections.
That's what I'm saying. We already have these things.
Yeah.
You don't have a better way of doing it. And he proved his incompetence. So he is not only a big government money burner, but he's also absolutely incompetent. He thinks he knows better than the professionals. He is against Customs and Border Patrol because he thinks he knows better than them. So dear people on the right, the folks that you like who are keeping the evil Mexicans out of the country, even they think Abbott is a total useless idiot.
I like it. That's where we're gonna end. We're gonna go to our second break. We come back, some really weird coincidences coming out of Russia having to do potentially with their war. I'm not saying anything. We're just gonna talk about some really interesting stories I found after this. So here's the thing, Brett, here's a little update. We gotta get through both of these and what remains, so let's be relatively fast, starting with this.
It's a message that says, kill all the prisoners. Perhaps save some of the officers, probably because they'll wanna interrogate them and get intelligence out of them. But this is just another intercept by the Ukrainians. Now, of course, we cannot verify it, and CNN has reached out to the Russian Ministry of Defense. No comment yet.
Yeah, I have a feeling they probably won't be forthcoming. Now, that's a devastating revelation that they believe. And again, grains of salt on everything. We don't know for sure what to trust coming from any source, even from a guy who apparently is just a disembodied head floating in darkness, of exactly what is true. But they're saying they've intercepted communiques that the policy now is just to execute the prisoners. And by the way, that is consistent in what we have seen from the Russian forces for some weeks. But that is just one of a number of devastating and in some cases hard to process bits of news coming out of the war or on the periphery of the war. And I want to talk about a few. So there's apparently footage showing a chemical plant in Russia being set on fire. Take a look at this. So just to be clear, that footage is not in Ukraine. It's in Russia. It's described as a chemical plant 250 miles east of Moscow. And chemical plants do get set on fire. Sometimes they just explode. It happens in the United States. It did come on the same day that a defense plant blaze also broke out, killing 7 people. Just putting that out there. Also happened to notice that there were a couple of oligarchs found dead just in the past couple of days. Former Kremlin official and Gazprom Bank vice president was found dead in his luxury Moscow apartment alongside the bodies of his wife and 13-year-old daughter on Monday. It appeared he had shot them before turning the gun on himself. Now that's in Moscow. Oligarch apparently killed his family and then killed himself. The following day, a former Novatek deputy chairman and his wife and his 18-year-old daughter were found dead in their mansion in Spain in this case. The scene suggested the woman had been stabbed before the oligarch hung himself in the garden. Now, this is two different countries. Neither, by the way, were on the international sanctions list. I'm just putting all this out here, Brett. That's a lot. And things happen in the world. There are coincidences. Multiple fires can break out. Multiple oligarchs can die. We're living in crazy times and I go to crazy places in my mind. That's all I'm saying.
What's your contention that the Russians are behind it?
Well, that theoretically there could be sabotage happening inside of Russia. That's an idea. That's not my idea, obviously, but that's an idea. And the idea that people have been killed in other countries by the Russians would hardly be the first time. Novel, unique, you know?
Well, I'll say this. When it comes to ridiculous activities that are also extremely bleak, like that is Russian culture. And then you throw in like an acrobat. In my experience with Russian culture, reading their books, reading and then like hanging out with some, it is just strange to me. But also, like, here's another thing that I like to draw a line between, like, to just give you an idea of where America has gotten relative to Russia, like years and years ago, it's almost comical and well known that if someone was engaged in a scandal in Russia, it was literally that the Kremlin had put child pornography on their computer. They called everyone a pedophile. Like, it's well documented. It's happened many, many times. That was their go-to move for a long time. And then they'd also go kill people. Here in America, we're right now at the point where we're calling everybody a pedophile.
Yeah,
I'm scared that we'll get to the point where they'll do this. And like when I'm thinking about these like murder suicide crime scenes, I can almost see, like, I'll say KGB, but whatever they have now, they're giggling. They're like, all right, I'm going to kill them and put the gun in hand, shoot himself, put him down.
Yeah.
Like,
and again, we're and not saying that that's what happened. There is no direct is evidence with, of any of this. It's just
I will compare the convenient coincidental nature of these events, but not declare that they are absolutely connected. It's just that, like, this happens a lot. So I it's either the thing where I'm implying might be the case, or it's just really, really bad luck that all the people who oppose Putin, either in public or in private, seem to end up dead. In ways that it's like, well, I can't believe he fell off giant balcony.
Yeah, ways that are just coincidence. That's all I'm saying. Anyway, by the way, none of this has to be anything more than a coincidence for the situation to be devastating. More photographs have now been released, satellite photography of mass graves outside of Mariupol. You can see they've been expanded. so many people are being killed. The situation is incredibly serious, even if only the things happening inside of Ukraine are true and verifiable. It is a devastating situation. The war needs to end. Now, that said, we are going to move into a very different topic to close out our hour. Let's jump into this video.
So I'm curious, are there been frequently asked questions of Bernie Sanders that he's going to run again in 24?
Yes. People, okay. I mean, amongst who, maybe not from Chuck Todd, but certainly from our allies, and there are a number of them, both people who endorsed us, mm-hmm. groups have endorsed us, supporters around the country have been saying, you know, I think.
So he's not going to primary Biden, correct?
Yes.
That's out of the question.
Well, right. I don't think that he's supporting Senator or President Biden aggressively trying to get the agenda passed. So yeah, primary's not on the table.
But he does not have that same deference for the vice president.
No, he respects Senator Harris. I think at that point,
remember, Vice President Harris.
President Harris, of course. Yeah, thank you.
That would get you in trouble.
Yeah, of course. As I should. I think you know that the question on Vice President Harris is you to run or anybody is to just say, what are you going to run for?
So that's an awesome update on what we've been talking about earlier this week about the fact that as the leak, which is either originated from or is at least confirmed by Faiz Shakir, is that that Bernie would run if Biden doesn't. Chuck Todd there, like sort of he's just saying, he's not saying anything. He's just saying, well, why wouldn't there be the deference for Harris, or clarifying it? Why would there be deference for a person who wouldn't be running for re-election? She is the current vice president. That's true. Vice presidents do run for president. That happens. Why would we expect that anyone, or especially Bernie, would offer deference to the vice president in that case, Brett?
Especially because he did better than she did. Hate to break it to you.
Quite a bit.
Why is the rubric by which we judge this like going to someone who lost? Because that's not how it works. This is not like line of succession. It's not like if God forbid something were to happen to Biden, Bernie's going to jump in and like sit at the Oval Office resolute desk faster. And now he's president. No, this is when an election happens, he would run.
Yeah,
that's what. And he's already said he's not going to do the thing that is like, oh my God, challenge Biden in a primary.
Mm-hmm. Harris wasn't chosen by the people to be the vice president. Like when she went up to be chosen by the people, as you pointed out, the people were more with Bernie. Now, look, to be fair, Biden ended up winning that race, so they could retort with that. And maybe that plays into Bernie not being willing to primary Biden specifically. But there's no inevitability to vice presidents. Vice presidents frequently run for president and lose. You get to weigh in as a people. The voters get to weigh in. By the way, I did want to let you know the one thing though, because like I feel like this is the beginning of, again, the strike back. Chuck Todd, a guy who had some disgusting things to say during the last primary about Bernie voters, certainly has a preference. He may not state it like I do, and that's supposed to seem more objective, but it is indisputable that he has a preference. I'm feeling a little bit of other establishment pressure coming down. So, by the way, if you take a look at this, it's coming from the Washington Post. They said only 21% of Democratic leaning voters say their choice would be Joe Biden again. That is like shockingly low for a president. Okay, so that opens up the possibility of someone else. They had a ranking, by the way. This is not like based on polls. It's just the Washington Post, Aaron Blake's preference. And so let's bring this up. They have Joe Biden at number one. They'd prefer that he just runs again. Pete Buttigieg is number two. Kamala Harris is three. They throw in Elizabeth Warren, there four. I mean, obviously, Amy Klobuchar has got to be top five. Why not? Roy Cooper, you can't walk down a street in America without people calling out for Roy Cooper, and then they throw an AOC as 10. Bernie's not even on the list, by the way. So I just find it so amazing. So get ready. If he does decide to run, it is going to be another time through that cycle of the establishment, objective, neutral journalist pressure to get the outcome that they want, which is definitely not Bernie Sanders.
There's no talent on the left.
There isn't. It's indisputable. Anyway, thank you, everyone. We've got more coming up. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.